For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restoring the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. I'm going to give you the toll-free number to call in, but we have a very special guest today. It is Aaron Tilbury from the Jonah Project. So our toll-free number is 844-320-4299. But because of the segments and the nature of the conversation, we won't be able to answer today. But you can still write that down for your future reference. If you cannot listen to this entire show today, which you will really want to hear this entire show today, it will be rebroadcasted on Saturday at 1 p.m. And as I always say, many parts of these shows refer to previous shows, and these shows build off of each other, so you want to stay abreast. And so when I make cross-references to something that I may have said earlier, you'll understand what I was referring to, so I don't have to repeat a plethora of things that I've said over the past several episodes and shows and so forth. And don't forget, you can download these podcasts at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to stay informed. Local announcements, you really missed a great opportunity if you didn't go to the Republican Coffee Club last week. Mayor Condon spoke, and it was very good. I mean, I enjoyed it, and I actually had a chance to ask him a question, why the city of Spokane is not going to do anything and has never done anything for Constitution Day. And I'm posing this question to all government leaders, because the Constitution is what all governments are built upon. It is the foundation. It's the bedrock of our self-governance and even, you know, the framework for building our states, counties, and so forth. And so why are they not at least doing something? And I will say this. I know Stevens County every year does a declaration, proclamation. They do something as a recognition for Constitution Day. And so I'm hoping to find somebody in Spokane County to do this as well. And let's make a real event of this, as I've been harping for the past year almost on this. This coming Friday at the Republican Coffee Club, Steve Bush is going to be speaking about the Endangered Species Act. And on the 28th of July, Sharon Hannock, she's the research mom. And what is wrong with our kids today? Hint, it's how they're educated. And again, this is on the corner of Trent and Hamilton, Friday morning at 7. Northwest Grass Movie Night's coming up in August, August 9th specifically. I will be presenting the content going through Republic Review. It's basically my executive summary in, you know, a little bit more entertaining format. But anyway, it'll be at Darcy's Restaurant out on Sprague in Spokane Valley. And this is a must-attend event if you really want to understand the argument for Republic Review. Don't forget that if you're looking to get your ticket out of the doghouse, the bouquet of flowers from Sunnyvale Flower Farm out in Suncrest, it's a U-pick, stuff the flowers into the jar, you pay $10, you go home. I mean, $10 today for a bouquet of flowers that you can get full cred for picking and, you know, just impressing that loved one and saying, I'm sorry, or hey, happy birthday, or what have you. It's always better to remember than to have to say I'm sorry. And believe me, it costs you a lot less. But the details are on the ReclaimingTheRepublic.org podcast page. Ballots are out. If you didn't know, you should have already received your ballot, and you need to make sure that you send it in today. If not, get it in tomorrow if you've missed the mail already. make sure that you get it in. And I highly recommend, as far as the city council, Tony Keepy, Tim Benn, and you can pick between Matthew Howe and Brian Burroughs. I have not had a chance to really meet and talk with those guys offline, but I know those two are competing. But I don't want you to marginalize this primary. The greater the showing, the stronger the showing in support for these conservative candidates, it helps curb the cost of the Democrats, because I don't think the Democrats want to find themselves spending $30 million again in losing a critical seat or in losing something that they've had a stronghold in. Now, they may actually come out swinging, because I think this is a bastion that they want to protect, but we've got to take this back. I've been saying this for months. This is a critical election. And all we have to do, go look at the numbers. All we have to do is just get you to vote, because the voter turnout sucks, especially in these off years for city council. And that is an indictment for you and the electorate for not getting out and getting these things done. If you want to complain about the environmental path that the city council is going down, and if you missed it on Monday, they're having the big discussion on this, violating the Constitution again, taxing the oil cars and coal cars and so forth. I'm telling you that it's your fault for not getting the incentive or the taking the initiative of just filling out these little blocks, putting a stamp on it, and mailing it back. I don't think Washington could make it any easier for you. That being said, I hope that I've motivated you. I'm not trying to insult you, but if you want to have a representative government, then you at least have to speak, and that speaking is by voting. I'm not sure, by the way, who, if you've heard of Breen and Biggs, he's the candidate that is running against Tony Keepy for the city council position. I forget which position it is. But there was a televised debate, and you should go online to the, I think it's Spokane County Republicans GOP or what have you, on Facebook. You can see this video of him actually looking at the moderator's notes during the debate and then, writing down presumably what the question was. And I just can't believe that there's that type of moral turpitude in political and elected officials. That's the point. We should have honest elected officials, and go see it for yourself. I'm still working on the Constitution Day locally as far as getting events. And so there's still the Constitution Party, I know, that is having an event. But again, that is, information that I hope to have plenty of dates and events that will meet your schedule by sometime next month. If you have not read the MSNBC testimony to the Congress timeline of corruption for Bill Clinton's administration, you need to go do that as well. Before we go into a hard break here, I wanted to say that we've got Aaron Tilbury in, and he is the leader of the Jonah Project, and he is the one that is going into very dark places, that is, where kids are being trapped and held hostage, and it's like sex slave trade. This is something that it will shock you. And I don't want to, take any of his wind, and he will be here when we get back from the break. But I hope that by listening to this, you get as equally touched as I and he. I mean, he was very apprehensive, and it took him a while to just digest how reprehensible this is and how evil this is. And the fact that he finally took that step into, actually engaging in this and taking this head on, to me, this is the behavior of a hero. It's not just somebody that dons a uniform. It is somebody that goes well beyond what, would be expected of that person. Well, we're going into the hard break. So like I said, when we come back, we'll have Aaron here. And I hope you listen to all of this discussion that I'm going to have with him. And we'll be right back after this. Thank you very much. Okay, so we're back reclaiming the Republic, and I have a local hero here with me, as I was saying before the break. And his name's Aaron Tilbury, and he is with the Jonah Project. And so I've not, just so you know, Aaron, I've not spent any effort or time in trying to explain to people the details of the Jonah Project or you or how you got into this. So why don't you start off with giving us some insights on how in the heck you got involved in this and, okay. and how this all started.
Yeah, I appreciate that. First, thanks for having me. This is an amazing opportunity. You know, I actually really like talking about how we started, even though it seems like forever ago. It's only been a few years. But and the reason is because I think even in that, there's a little bit of a lesson for all of us. I was an assistant baseball coach. I won't even get into how that happened, but it was an unexpected turn of life events. And there I am, you know, watching a kid getting ready to go into a baseball game. And
were you already a pastor at that time?
I was not actually
okay,
a pastor. I had met God in a wheat field just a couple years prior, and I just wanted to put my hands to some good work. And so I'm just out there helping and trying to show what I know. And kid didn't have any shoes, didn't have any cleats. And so, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you're kind of looking at that going, that should be a third world issue. That's not something where at American high school we should have a kid going into a baseball game without shoes or cleats. And so I got a kid a pair of cleats, and it wound up building some relationship. And eventually, really where things kind of took off and we became a project is as some of those relationships built with some of the kiddos at Rogers and some of the surrounding areas there, you know, you build equity, you build relational trust. And we started doing coats and shoes and some basic needs from some people in my church and sponsoring some kids for GSL cards. And all of that led one day to a conversation where a young woman who, you know, I just helped out with some Dairy Queen in a conversation a week or two before and handed her one of my cards. And I said to her what I say to all the kids at that time. I said, look, wherever you're at, whatever's going on, you might find yourself in a scary place. We get it. No judgment, call us and we'll come, no matter what, wherever you're at. And we'll get you home, we'll get you fed, we'll get you back to school, whatever that needs to look like for you.
So I'm going to interject. So this was the premise of them just being in a scary place, not even understanding the trade system or anything else. The Jonah Project hadn't even started. So
yeah, literally, we were just doing basic need stuff. And our motto at the time, and still kind of is, was compassion is a basic need. We were just trying to deliver, you know, a coat or a pair of shoes, but without strings attached, you know?
Right.
And so, and then this young lady asked a counselor that she was seeing for an eating disorder if she could speak with me. And I think that was a little odd for the school counselor, you know? But I happened to be on campus, and so I sat with this young lady, and she began to detail for me the things that were going on in her life and in the life of her family and sister. And some of this stuff has been reported about, you know, actually a couple years ago, there was a big sting operation. So some of this stuff got some news. But at the end of the day, I sat there as a grown man and as a father, listening to a young woman describe for me the most brutal stuff I'd ever heard in my life. And I have a little bit of a background that's rough, is maybe how I'll put that for radio. And it was the worst stuff I've ever heard a human being do to another human being, and it changed everything for us.
And so what did you do with that girl at that point?
Yeah, so I would love to say that I jumped in immediately and, you know, rescued her. The reality is I sat with that darkness for 2 weeks before I could even talk to my pastor, who's my best friend, and my wife about it. I realized it was something where I wasn't going to lay my head down on the pillow again the same way at night. I just was burning to do something. I felt compelled. And so I, at the point that I was able to finally share with my wife what I had heard, she began to help me find resources. And we prayed about it and agreed that there's a reason that this young gal didn't go to, whether it was a parent or a police officer or a teacher or the counselor. And for whatever that reason was, we needed to step up. We needed to help her find some resources. And so for a little while, she came and lived with us. And my wife wound up helping a little bit with her sister, who was a victim and is a survivor. And so that was the initial touch for us, was actually just realizing here's a real human being that we know that we care about, and this is happening.
Okay, so without the graphic details, what was really happening? I'm going to presume that this young lady was probably still living at home, but she was pretty much possessed by some outer energy, outer force people that were basically prostituting her.
Yeah, and you know how this worked for this particular young woman was a lot of leverage with the sister. Her sister was a little bit younger. Her sister was actually pregnant from one of the pimps. And so there was also a hook for her in that her sister was involved. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation as to what the family knew or didn't know. But what we do know is this. It got so bad that when the math teacher, for example, would turn around and do a math problem on the dry erase board, one of the perpetrators in her class would lean over and whisper in her ear, you know you're next. You know what we're going to do to you, right? I mean, these are the type of things that are happening to kids in schools and all over Spokane.
Okay, so these aren't your standard, you know, paradigm of pimps. This is a new generation learning in school. Where are they getting their background? Where are they getting their playbook from?
Yeah, I'm really glad you pointed that out, JR, because that's exactly what's happening here is... You know, you and I spoke a little bit off air about this being such an economics issue.
Right.
And as we know, economics drive everything. And so what's happened is we have seen massive, whether it's drug cartels or mafias or what have you, we've seen that internationally. But here in this country, the context of our neighborhoods and our law system and stuff is a little different. And so what you see is typically families and gangs, small gangs, running these operations, and they tend to be a lot of times younger guys that are taught these skills on how to be a predator. They are literally in the same way that one of our kids might go to school and learn algebra. They are literally taught how to look out for a young woman who maybe has less self-esteem or is more of a target or the mentally ill or that type of thing. So they are taught a lot of times by older brothers, other gang members, drug dealers, because this is really, it's the fastest growing criminal industry in the world. It's second behind drugs. And so that's why we have this younger, these younger perpetrators.
So this is not something that people just stumble into. You walk into school, I think I'm going to become a perpetrator or a pimp or what have you. So you engaged with this young girl and her sister, I guess. And so from there, how did you continue going? And bear in mind, we're coming close to a break, so we may have to span this over. But, you know, what was next?
Yeah, so what was next is as we were helping this young woman is us realizing as we did research that first there were no resources for her. They just don't exist here. In other words, can't take her to a domestic violence shelter. There's no system set up for a young woman who's been trafficked here.
Now, government-wise or religious-wise?
Here at that time, both.
Okay.
Now, I will say across the country, about, I don't know, probably 98% of the agencies that do step into this arena are faith-based organizations.
Okay.
And so what we did in trying to find some resources for her and realizing that there just weren't any, in that period of time, another young woman that we had housed with a family in our church, we started noticing the signs because we were starting to learn what to look for. And so the next step for us was actually realizing there was a young woman who'd been living with one of our church families for 3 months. Of course, they weren't the perpetrators, but I saw these signs and we figured out this isn't just a one-off. And so that was our first indication that this problem is a lot bigger than people understand.
Well, that's very interesting. And as I look at how you got into this, obviously this was a catalyst, you know, running into this young woman and, you know, from the wheat field to working in baseball to engaging and being called in. Obviously this was a slow fused catalyst, but interestingly enough, there's something that, you know, created a dedication in your life and obviously in your family's life. And so here's our break music. So when we come back from the break, I'd like you to kind of cover that. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And please stay tuned. We'll be back with Aaron Tilbury after this. All right, we're back with Aaron Tilbury of the Jonah Project. And before we get into what I will call the galvanizing moment that Aaron had that created the Jonah Project, because it's a Herculean commitment. I don't want to marginalize what it takes for a person to commit their life to this kind of service. But before we do that, Jonah, why don't you tell us how people can get a hold of you or the Jonah Project? What's the simplest way?
Yeah, jonahproject.org is the easiest way, and you can figure out kind of what we do, and we've got emergency rescue information, all that kind of stuff on there. That's jonahproject.org.
Okay, and for you listeners that know how to get to my podcast page on reclaimingtherepublic.org, I will have your links there, and I will put the contact information. It'll be in the usual place at the bottom of all of my podcasts that I've got active right now on that page. Anyway, so what was it that galvanized or forged your steel in this commitment to this?
Yeah, there's always a little bit of a story, and I'll try to be brief here, but there are really two moments looking back that changed the game for what we were going to be as a project, and certainly for my family, for my wife and I, members of our church. The first was a young woman. I had mentioned earlier last segment that we realized in our church family was being trafficked, and was past the grooming that they call it, the grooming stage, and it was actually being sold around. And we're doing our best to care for her and find resources and housing, and we had her with an advocate. And we had one night a young woman come to my home and knock on the door asking for her. And I didn't really think much of it, but the young woman wasn't with me, so I sent this young gal away. And as I went back upstairs, I heard some shouting. I knew it wasn't in English outside my window. And I started listening to it. I said, I don't know if it's Russian or what, something like that. Turns out it was Ukrainian. But in any case, the moment I heard that, I just felt a sickening feeling in my stomach that something was going on. I was home alone with my wife. She was in the kitchen making some eggs, actually, some late night breakfast for us. And I just felt compelled. I ran to the front door. And as I opened the front door, I looked, and there was a guy who was walking at my walk and another one in the street. And they were approaching my house. And I just knew it was bad. I didn't know how bad at the time, but I locked the front door behind me, and I met these guys. And it was two Ukrainian guys that had come for this girl. I probably didn't have a whole lot of time to think about it, which is probably why I acted the way I did. But ultimately, chased those guys away from the house. We'll just leave it at that. That was something where it really made me think about the way that we're engaging this darkness and what that means for my family, and really the first time that I needed to count the cost. The second moment was in searching for resources. I called World Relief in Spokane, and was immediately put through to the director. At the time, it was a guy by the name of Mark Cadle, and he answered the phone. I thought that was pretty cool. I'm getting the director on the phone. Turns out he had gotten off a flight just in from Miami, and the entire time he said he was praying for men of integrity to join this fight. And so when I called, he looked at that as an answer to his prayer. And I took those two things and prayed about them and ruminated about them, talked to my wife and my pastor about them, my family. But the moment where I knew that this was something that we were going to be called to was actually in the shower. I was just praying in the shower and speaking to Papa and just asking him, what role do I have to play in this? And he said to me, for the rest of your life, you're going to be pulling people out of darkness and setting them free. It was a moment that, without trying to be really dramatic, took my breath away, actually. And so that morning, actually, I went and I talked to Andrew, who's my best friend again, and our pastor at the Bridge. And I said, this is on my heart, and I really think this is what I'm called to do. And that was the beginning. And we shared that with my church family. And it wasn't very long after that before girl number three, he came around. And then this is, where we've been.
So you're a pastor now.
I am now,
And so there was some level of education, certifications. I mean, in such an intrusive state environment, I'm sure that there had to have been some qualifications to allow you to become this super social worker. Let's just say that, because we have a socialized society, whether we like it or not. And I'm working to take that back, but. What did you really formally have to do?
Yeah, it's so it's interesting. I spent it's a great question, and I think you'll be surprised by the answer because of the way where we find ourselves in society today. But our thing with Jonah was always loving people without strings attached. This idea that compassion without a catch could actually heal a human being. And so I will tell you that I have worked with people from Shared Hope to being on the Human Rights Commission, to our city council, to law enforcement, to the sheriff's department, to other agencies. We've partnered with an agency called Justice Ministries in Charlotte, North Carolina, as we build this railroad for safe places for young people and for women. And I will tell you, in each and every one of those instances, no one has asked me for a single credential, not once.
And interesting.
I truly believe that that's because this idea that love without strings attached, like it's not just a novel concept.
Right.
It's truth.
Right.
And people feel the life in it. They just don't know what it is that they feel the life in.
Right.
And so we have had amazing amounts of open doors for us simply, I believe, because we don't have, you know, the perfect program, but because there's no one else to do this in Spokane. There's no one else that's going into these dark places. There just isn't, right? We don't have a specialized law enforcement team that does this. We have one officer assigned. We don't have, we talked about this earlier. We don't have, you know, government entities rampant through the country, you know, with all the gadgetry and pulling kids out of darkness. It's 98, 99, maybe 100, close to 100% faith-based organizations housing these kids. And so I've been really blessed that my lack of formal education has not been a barrier. In fact, I think that some of the organizations that, I don't know, the higher ups or what have you, maybe appreciate some of my rough edges for this kind of work, and the fact that I don't forget where I came from.
Well, it may be a necessity, or, you know, but the title pastor is not necessarily a formal one. Because it was my understanding that many faiths require some type of a certificate or degree.
Yes, I was ordained in my church. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but
okay.
As far as this type of work, when it gets down to how are we going to help a human being heal, what does that look like? I was looking at some organizations that had not done some things well, looking at some organizations that had done some things well, and a whole lot of relational involvement, even flying to other facilities and seeing how they do things.
So from that third engagement mm-hmm. with a innocent life, mm-hmm. how long ago was that?
We've been operating. This November will be 3 years for the Jonah Project, and we've been involved in anti-trafficking stuff for two.
And so how long did it take from that third innocent life to the founding of the Jonah Project?
Oh, so the Jonah Project was founded just prior to me meeting that first young woman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was, we needed a name.
Oh, okay.
Now the nature of what we do was...
See, I thought that it started, or the Jonah Project became the antidote, you know, after
yeah.
you kind of realize, hey, there's a systemic problem here.
Yes.
We need an antidote.
Yeah.
For this.
We still had a name. We were still the Jonah Project. We just weren't functioning the way we were.
Oh, I see.
And the reason was because, I mean, let's face it, I'm a pastor and they're letting me walk around a public school campus and talk to kids.
Okay.
So you got to have a name for your project. You know, you got to have your 501c3 and that kind of stuff. And
I
so
see.
We had put that together. But again, I mean, when we encountered that young woman in our church, that's when really the game changed. And like I said, I realized that this is something that the equity we had been building
right.
with the basic needs for that first year
right.
were really the open door for what we were going to do for the project.
So what I'd like to do is when we come back from break, because it's break time, is to talk about how people can assist the Jonah Project. So please stay tuned so that you can get this next segment. This is critical, so we appreciate you staying tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so again, we're back with Aaron Tilbury of the Jonah Project. And before we went into the break, I wanted to kind of lead the conversation into how you listeners and how we, good people, can get engaged in supporting the Jonah Project. So, Aaron, what ways and mechanisms can you use? Because I completely understand that you are a completely funded and or supported by contributions. There's no sugar daddy out there for you.
Right, right. Yeah, and I really appreciate it. This thing that we're talking about, there'll be a lot of terms that come up as we talk about trafficking, prostitution, all sorts of stuff. And, you know, when you and I met the first time, GR, I was really clear, and I used the term slavery. And that's what we're talking about. This is a freedom issue. And so I want to thank you again for letting me on here and just say to everybody out there, at every point in time in our nation's history, when freedom has been on the line, when it's been challenged, it's required people that aren't necessarily directly affected by the issue to make a stand. It didn't matter if it was a war that we fought for freedom on in our country or someplace else, or a civil rights movement. It is a community and social effort that's going to take, it's going to need a community and social effort to affect change. And so we appreciate both the human beings and the funding. We are a volunteer organization. I've got some great people that are involved, that have come alongside over the last year or two to build something that is now functioning in our community and housing and rescuing and advocating for women and children. We just opened our second home just a week and a half ago for women. We are the only organization in Spokane that houses women and children at no cost.
Because now, when you say women, these are really minors, correct?
We opened a second home, so we actually have a home for women as well.
Oh, okay.
So not just teen and kids, but we actually have, so we can do both age groups now. And our model, when we complete it, we really are, I don't know if desperate's the right word, but praying and hoping for funds to get one more home at least going for young men, because a third of the calls that I get are for young men.
So how can people, one, donate? And you said you're a 501c3.
We are.
Which means you keep track of your donations and you provide tax forms for people so that they can actually make those claims.
Yes.
Against their taxes. So that way, if you've made a little bit too much money, if God's blessed you this year and you made a little bit too much money and you want to be able to defer that or actually write that off, then people can donate directly. So what are the mechanisms?
Yeah. So on our website, which is jonahproject.org, there is a text to donate, and there's contact info that you can call and donate. There's also an address. You could mail a check. We don't have purely online donations set up yet, but that's coming. We've got a bank partner who I think is going to help us with that. So most of the donations typically come right now through like a mailed check or a monthly commitment where someone says, hey, we'd like to provide $100 a month. Knowing that obviously this is going to be an issue for a while, and then we do like a monthly debit off the credit card type thing.
So have you looked at PayPal as a medium for donations?
Yeah, we did. And so ultimately, I think that, and I'm not the person setting this up, but our person that handles that figured out a better way to do it with a bank with less fees being taken out.
I see.
We could see more of the donated money. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, you know, we're fully volunteer. So our goal would be for all of that money to ultimately equal something that's helping heal a human being.
So I think Apple has a mechanism as well that either doesn't have fees or their fees are a lot lower than PayPal. So that may be something that
I'll bring that. Yeah, I'll bring that up to them. I know that we've got a Square thing. We're doing it. There's some different options,
right,
but which we can find on the website.
But what about donating goods? Because when we talked a month or so ago, you talked about having yard sale type of stuff, and
right. People
were donating brand new things or what have you. And let's say you have a business and you're overstocked and you want to get rid of some stuff and you can actually write that off for your taxes, then what can people do?
Yeah, that's our primary funding mechanism right now. We have two churches. I'll just plug them really quick, Real Life and Life Center, that have pitched in to support the two houses we have. But our primary method of funding are these thrift sales. And actually, I think it's this weekend. I'd have to look at the dates. We've been promoting this on Facebook and some different places, some flyers around Garland. But at 1047 West Garland, where our church is located, there's a large parking lot across the way. And I believe this weekend they're doing a two-day indoor sale, or coming up in the next week or so. And so we have a gal by the name of Diana, and she and a team of people from Career Path that she's putting to work and actually helping advocate for and teaching some work skills. Those folks sell the stuff that's donated, other than twin-size bunk beds and mattresses, because we always need those for the houses. But everything else gets sold, and then we use that revenue to support the project.
And so the proceeds, just to be clear, the proceeds you make from the sales and the direct donations, 100% of those go into the operations of what you're not paying for administrative fees. When I say administrative fees, let's say you're using PayPal and there's a 3% or 6% or some type of a fee taken out. The rest is actually going towards the operation, paying for the house, paying for the food, paying for the lights, and so forth. Salaried people.
No, we in fact, we can run, and I think this is going to blow some people away, and this is a small amount of money can go a long way when you have the right people involved. We can run a house with 6 to 8 survivors and house leaders that are there overnight, food, shelter, clothing, access to resources for less than $1,400 a month.
So if you're driving, I hope you just didn't have an accident, because I don't think there's very many households that are running under $1,400 a month. And housing how many?
Six to eight
survivors. So in other words, you got 6 to 8 people. Do you provide air conditioning and heat?
Yeah, the air conditioning's tough. We have fans in the windows sometimes.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, we deal with the homes that we've been fortunate enough to secure. But, you know, things are really going well. We are at 88 human beings right now.
Wow.
88 in the time that we've been doing
this. So how many, and we haven't gotten into this, how many, because you threw a number out there, that there were how many in Spokane area?
Yeah, so the last meaningful study that was done was in 2008. They estimated about 600. In talking with local law enforcement, our FBI contacts, as well as some of the folks in the civic government, right now, the number is estimated between 1,000 and 1,500.
1,000 or 1,500 slaves.
Slaves in Spokane. Now, when you add to that 1,500 homeless teens, and the numbers that the Justice Department tells us that 1 in 3 of them will be solicited, 1 in 5 trafficked, there's another 300 to 500.
Oh, okay. And so the problem is a lot bigger than anybody, I think, wants to admit or even acknowledge. But hopefully, by having you on this show, you know, can become an epiphany for other people that are listening, that they can find a great avenue in helping. As I try to reclaim the Republic, we can be moving towards this. This path of recovering our community and making it whole. There's lots of ways to do that, and I think that education is important.
Yes.
And I also believe that getting involved in your community and taking a stand resonates with, I believe, the evil that's out there. Because when they realize that they're just not going to get Spokane with easy pickings, then they may go somewhere else, because it may be just not worth their effort and time, because these folks are just looking for easy prey. And if we can take this community back, then I believe that the rest of this nation can be saved as well. I want to really thank you for coming in for this show.
Thank
and
you.
We want to have you in, and I want to be able to talk to you in the future about, you know, your operations and you know, some of the other things that you're kind of doing, and what you have to deal with, if that's okay with you. And I'd also like to have you come back every once in a while to give us kind of a status on, you know, has it been beneficial? As a matter of fact, I want you to give me the information when you're having sales, so I can let people know in my local segment of the very first of the show what's going on and so forth.
We'll do that.
And again, thank you so much for coming in, folks.
Appreciate it.
I hope you can reach out and help the Jonah Project with goods, money, whatever you can. These people need our help. And so thank you very much for tuning in this time. And we'll see you next week.